There will be spoilers ahead. Lots of spoilers, so be careful, won't you?
Welcome to this newest episode, Max, Mike, Movies Podcast Show, where the two people, Max, Mike, are the reviewing movies that they are finding to the review best. Oh, the funny they have with the reviewing movies in series such as this week's, Because I Wanna Want To, and Liking It. What are the movie that the Max Mike choose for this week reviewing? Why? What else but the Spielberg Steven movie film, Hey, the Artificial Intelligence, I ask you. This movie is the one where the intelligence is artificial, making its small children all creepy-like. But is it? Only one way.
Oh, dear gods, I know I was a little short on time this week, but this is the last time I try and get my computer to do the opening of the show for me. Such slop.
I thought you never sounded better.
Speaking of slop, over there is our host, the one with the twitch in his eye and the spiked club in his hand. Max, your slop is next. Levine, put the nice club down, Max.
Smash! Max, smash!
Hat, go to sleep. And me, I'm just the other guy. Mike, watch it, bub. Loose. We are indeed looking into the 2001 film AI. Before we do that, we're going to do this.
Poll question.
The question burning everyone's minds down last week was...
Itching, flaking.
Puffing. What is your favorite cinematic depiction of a celestial being? Answers? You got them. Jen Ings is up first with, quote, the angels and demons in Good Omen, specifically Crowley and Aziraphale.
Yeah.
I'll always love Alan Rickman in Dogma, end quote. Well, Jen, have we got an episode for you. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of that movie, Jamie Kleinert wrote, quote, Alanis Morissette in Dogma, end quote. I have a feeling that movie is going to be popping up again.
I think could be.
Yeah, thanks, Jamie. Nick Hoffman replied to Jamie saying, quote, mine as well, end quote. Thanks, Nick. Tyler Stewart sent, quote, most of the cast of Dogma. It was an ensemble, end quote.
Dark Horse. Yeah.
And he's right. Well, thanks, Tyler.
Hmm.
Kelly Cooper's answer was, quote, George Burns as God in Oh God, 1977. Cary Grant as an angel in The Bishop's Wife, 1947.
Heard of that? Never saw it.
I never even heard of it. Paul Bettany as the angel Michael in Legion, 2010, end quote. Ooh, George Burns, Cary Grant, Paul Bettany. Great choices. Thanks, Kelly.
And delicious flavors.
Brian Mundo said, quote, does the fifth element count? Technically, she is the perfect being, yes.
Kinda,
also,
yeah.
Also, Alanis Morissette in Dogma, end quote. Oh, Brian, fifth element will always count. Thanks.
Yep.
Well, that's going to peak.
Yep.
Dave wrote, quote, I mean... Peter Falk, of course, Wings of Desire. I fell asleep last time I watched that movie, but it is very poetic. Or depictions of death, especially the chess scene in The Seventh Seal and the derivatives of that. Is the salmon moose scene familiar? Or a short called The Dove? Note, at first I thought you were talking about the omnipotent space beings like Q or the Vorlons, or maybe something made of marshmallows that can only be stopped by total protonic reversal, or even a giant space turtle, end quote. Wow. I've never seen...
Filled with meat.
And he's nicely sweet. I've never seen Wings of Desire. Have you seen it?
I have, actually. Wim Wenders.
Oh, sure, yeah. Yeah, we love the Wim Wenders.
Well, actually, he's German. Yeah, that is actually... It's a gorgeous film, but I'm afraid it is a bit of a snooze sometimes.
Oh,
it's very slow.
Does he play God in it?
Peter Falk plays Peter Falk.
It
turns out he's a former angel.
Does he ever, at any point during the film, go, yeah, just one more thing?
He does not.
Oh, well, never mind. Giant space turtle has to be Gamera. Can't think of another one.
I don't know. It might be great Atuin from the Terry Pratchett books.
Oh, that's right.
The turtle at the world turtle.
Right, could be. But
that's a bit more celestial, yeah. And, but either way, it works.
In any case, thanks, Dave.
Yeah.
I wonder when his birthday is. Charles Forsyth posted, quote, Alanis Morissette in Dogma was great because not only did it make God a woman, but also Canadian. But my favorite is No Face in Spirited Away, end quote. Ooh, an animated answer on top of all the Dogma call-outs. Well, thanks, Charles.
Nice.
Well, we got a little letter from our old pal Bill O'Lading.
Ah, Bill O'Lading, Bill O'Lading, Bill O'Lading.
We love them letters.
Oh, yes.
He wrote, quote, "Vanity, definitely my favorite sin."
Oh, yeah.
"I really love Al Pacino's." Actually, should have been, "Vanity, definitely my favorite sin."
Hoo-ah!
Hoo-ah! You can't handle the vanity. "I really love Al Pacino's depiction of Satan in The Devil's Advocate, 1997.
That is a lot of fun.
I never seen it. Keanu Reeves' hotshot small stakes attorney receives a too-good-to-be-true job offer in the big city, and it is. The temptations that Pacino's disguised Satan provides are earthly: money, sex, power. The law firm he chairs is the embodiment of ambition and moral compromise in modern society, a sharp contrast to traditional depictions for fire, brimstone, et al. It's also normal and also sinister.
Evil.
Pacino is also expertly cast and excels in portraying the devil as incredibly intelligent, articulate, and charming, using sophisticated persuasion and understanding of human weakness rather than brute force. The final revelation of Satan's nature and his final attempts to tempt Reeves' character into signing the proverbial devil's book and Father the Antichrist, and the moving statuary, the music, an eerie setting, it could have all been so hokey, but it's done so well. I absolutely love the final chapter where Reeves seemingly succeeds in rejecting the devil's advances and returns to his boring small-stakes life. But it's revealed the devil is not yet done with him. A restrained performance that gets at the nature of man's fall from grace and its consequences on earth and in hell. The devil's advocate gets my vote," end quote. Wow, never seen that one
good
either.
Good choice.
Yeah.
I have seen that. He's right. It's a terrific portrayal of the devil, and it's so creepy because it's a lot of it is just so mundane. Okay, a little of it's a little obvious. Pacino's character's name is John Milton.
Don't get it. Nope.
Really? Shall I hit you over the head harder?
Dr. Dracula, at least.
It is not. No, no, and it's not Lou Cipher.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that. Thanks, Bill.
Yeah.
Well, that only leaves the hot hotline, which means another chance for romance for old Max. And here she is.
And I got to put on my white tie, dusting off my tails here. Oh,
Doris Simple Maya, at least according to Google Translate or whatever.
Google Transcribe is amazingly accurate.
Yeah, stop panting, Max. Let's listen.
Hello, Max Mike Movies. Hi, Max. This is Doris Simple Maya here to answer your poll question for the week, which just happens to be, what is your favorite cinematic depiction of celestial beings? Well, I'm going to go with an oldie but goodie because he is an oldie but goodie. Well, he was an oldie but goodie by the time he left. Anyway, I'm going with George Burns as God in, oh God, maybe not book two, but at least Oh God. Because, I mean, think about it. What else would God look like but a little old man with glasses and a cigar? He's perfect, and he also has that right sense of humor. I think it's all perfect. That's what the celestial being should be. That is my answer. I hope you guys have a wonderful week, and I look forward to hearing next week's episode. And I'll see you later, Max. Bye.
Ah, another vote for old George. Well, thanks, Doris. We always liked it. The light's still blinking.
Hey, it's still going. Yeah, we got a second
I wonder
one.
Who that could be.
Hello, Max Mike Movies. This is real Julia Roberts giving a little wingy-dingy on the old phone box. Hello especially to Mike. Oh, hello, Mike. Anyway, I want to answer this week's poll question. I know it's been a really long time, but a girl's busy here in Hollywood making movies to entertain millions. Anyway, what you wanted to know was, what is my favorite depiction of a celestial being in movies? Well, I'm going to go with that hunk of llama, Brad Pitt, in Meet Joe Black. I believe he's supposed to be deaf in that film, but oh, who cares? Anytime I get to see, Brad Pitt, who's almost as exciting as Mike. Well, I mean, who wouldn't want to see that? Anyway, that's my answer, and hope it helps you folks out. I'm always listening. This is real Julia Roberts saying goodbye.
Wow, my knees are all jelloed. Swoon.
Oh, boy.
Squee!
Thank you
so much, real Julia Roberts TM. We just love hearing from you.
Don't anybody tell him.
Tell me what?
Nothing.
She likes me. She really likes me.
I thought it was real Sally Fields.
No, she hasn't called in yet. Perhaps one day she will. She also is busy. But we also love hearing from Max, especially when this is his question. So who's your favorite movie, angel, devil, take your pick?
One of my favorites always was Time Bandits, Ralph Richardson as the supreme being.
Oh, wow.
I just loved that sort of world-weary, complete Britishness. But I am the supreme being, after all. I'm not completely dim. I mean, he's only in it briefly. But, and, you know, David Warner's a lot of fun as evil.
Okay.
I mean, that basically is who his character is. So I go there. But honestly, Dogma. Yeah. I got to agree with the crowd. Dogma is overall. I love the way they portray the angels, the demons, God, all of it. I think that's terrific. Yep. Thank you, Dan Brown. All the holy blood, holy grail. Oops, I mean.
Sadly, the only thing I've ever seen Ralph Richardson in was Dragon Slayer.
Huh.
And I thought he was great, but I just never have seen him anything else. And I guess he's one of those great old British theater actors that did a few movies. Too bad.
Oh, yeah. He was one of those, you know, crowd with Olivier and Alec Guinness and all the others. Yeah. But what about you? What's your favorite portrayal of the holy, the unholy, etc.?
Well, I got two, and one of them is, to be fair, a TV appearance, and that is Islington, as played by Peter Capaldi. Oh. That's the first time I ever saw Peter Capaldi, and it's like, oh, he's neat and vaguely frightening, so that's pretty cool. But I also really like Robert De Niro and Angel Hart. He's very quiet and subtle, and they do this one thing that I thought added a lot, which is, I don't know whose idea it was, but he's got these long, pointed fingernails, and they do close-up of his
hands. Just like claws.
Yeah. And he's like, he's picking up, I think, his onions, and then later, I think he's peeling an apple with one of them, which, you get it? Apple?
Huh?
And this is...
Yeah, it's almost as subtle as his name, which is, as I said, Lewis Cipher.
I think this is literally the film right before Mickey Rourke went out to get his face punched.
I think that is.
But
that
it's a really like neat film.
Boy role.
It's got, Lisa Bonet's in it?
Yep.
Really neat film. I haven't seen it in a long time, but I liked both of those, so... But, and Dogma. So thanks again for those great answers. They make our show a heck of a lot better, so much so that we're going to ask you to do it again this week. We'd like to know, what movie predicted future events, technology, or persons the best? Could be any event, robot, flying nun, flavor packet, anything. Let us know.
Flying nun.
One thing I predict is that we're moving on to the next section, which we call...
The Facts.
The movie this week is AI, Artificial Intelligence, and its budget was $100 million. Take $235 million, which is not a lot, especially for a Spielberg movie.
Yeah, didn't triple the money, didn't make money. I
guess we won't be getting that franchise.
Yeah.
Speaking of Spielberg, this movie... was not his idea. It was Stanley Kubrick's. And he'd worked on it for 20 years before passing the project on to his buddy Steven, thinking it was really more his cup of tea. You might think that the middle section with the flesh fair and police pursuit were the Kubrick parts and the opening closing bits were Spielberg's, but it's actually the other way around. Supposedly the ending specifically was exactly as Kubrick wanted it. Honestly, really? I was actually
that
not
surprises
that
surprises me.
It didn't really initially. It did, and then later I'm like, having watched it for the show, I'm not that surprised. So, I got a question for you, Max. Do babies have to shave? A question I don't think you saw coming.
I did not.
Well, Haley Joel did. To make him look more artificial, Osment's exposed skin was shaved every day. Wow.
God. Smooth as a baby's backside.
Yeah, put that on your resume. I used to shave Haley Joel Osment when he was only 10. Okay.
Oh, yeah, I saw that in the credit. Osment shaver.
Wrangler. Yeah.
Yeah, Osment Wrangler,
John Williams, Spielberg's favorite composer, made music for this film. Some of it's so good, Spielberg recut the movie to fit the score. The last 7 minutes is a piano concerto, which kept going after the film stopped. So Stevie Baby re-edited it so we wouldn't have to cut any music.
I'm sorry, he doesn't like being called Stevie Baby.
What? I don't think I did call him Stevie Baby.
Yes, you did. Let's move on.
There's a tiny, tiny continuity problem in the movie. the World Trade Center appears in the film, as this was made mere months before their collapse. Spielberg decided not to edit them out for the video release, unlike his previous hanky-panky with Close Encounters. Flashlights! You thought they were guns, but they were really flashlights.
I thought that was E.T.
Yes, it was E.T. Yeah. I'm sorry. Mm. I'm not even going to fix that. The hell with it. That's how real this show is. Mistakes. Yep. We love them. Speaking of it, how dumb are we?
We're so dumb.
You might wonder why the title of this movie is initials that are then spelled out. Seems that folks didn't get just AI and thought the movie was called A1. What, it's about steak sauce? Seriously, yeah. So they added the second part because we are indeed too stupid.
And most people were walking around going, AI, AIO.
Most people were not.
I'm pretty sure they were.
You might not have noticed, but David, the android played by Haley Joel Osment, never blinks. This was the actor's idea, and Spielberg directed the other android actress to follow suit, and they mostly did. Yeah. This movie bears the first writing credit for Steven Spielberg since 1982's Poltergeist.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Apparently he doesn't write much. That New York skyline of the future. It's so recognizable and yet so futuristic. So futuristic that one of the buildings isn't a building. It's a speaker that came with an Apple Mac computer made by Harman Kardon. So there's your shoe if you that's a deeper.
Give it time. I'm sure that'll be a real thing in the city someday.
Yeah.
Yes, this entire building is a speaker.
Oh, boy. That's like putting cell service on planes. No, thank you. Of all his movie roles, this is Haley Joel Osment's favorite.
Really?
Yeah. So, what was the pitch for this movie? It's kind of a Blade Runner meets Field of Dreams. No.
What?
Really. That was the pitch.
You're kidding.
Nope. I don't see the Field of Dreams part, but...
really? No.
Who loved this movie? Roger Ebert, who gave it 3 out of 4 stars, except later he recanted and gave it a full 4 and added it to his list of great movies. So there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And dear God, so much more. This is a Spielberg movie, so the trivia never ends. But we do. Unless, Max, do you have anything else you want to throw in there?
Only one thing. We have a robot shot out of a cannon at one point. He was listed as the comedian. He is voiced by Chris Rock.
Yeah.
He has one line. Originally, he was supposed to be voiced by Jerry Seinfeld.
I think I would actually rather see Jerry Seinfeld get shot out of a cannon.
I just can't picture. What are you doing? I'm a robot. Why are you shooting me out of a cannon?
What's the deal with a cannon? Besides which, let's see. How many black people are in this movie? I'm going to go with 2. And one of them gets to talk, and he gets shot out of a cannon. So, But let's get to that plot. It's the future. All the ice caps have melted because of global warming, and all that's left of the U.S. is New Jersey? Figure that one out. Professor Hobby of Cybertronics is talking to his team about their next step in artificial intelligence. Sure, they've made this nifty robot which can feel and react like a real person, but it can't love. But even harder than making a machine love is making a human want to love it back, right? So he sets their team on that goal. Meanwhile, poor Monica and Henry have a young son with a crippling disease that science can't cure. He's kept in cryogenics until, perhaps, someday a cure will be found. But it's been years and Henry worries that Monica can't move on. Just so happens that not only does Henry work for Cybertronics, they choose him to try out their new robot. It's a child named David, and gee, isn't he just as good as their real son? I mean, he walks and talks and everything. Initially, Monica isn't having it. David is creepy. But slowly, he wins her and Henry over. So she activates him fully for realsies forever. Suddenly, Martin, their son, is okay, totally cured, and coming home. And he really, really doesn't like this weird robot brother that's kind of taken his place. They do not get along. David just wants to be loved. Is that so wrong?
David, why did I send my mother to Atlanta?
Through some misunderstood actions, David is suddenly deemed unsafe to remain in the family, and Henry tells Monica to return him to the factory where he'll be decommissioned.
No, disassembled.
Yeah. Instead, she leaves him by the side of the road thinking this is a better answer somehow.
Yeah.
David soon gets lost in the evils of the future and is caught by a robot-destroying AI hater who takes him and David's new pal, Robot Gigolo Joe, to the Robot American Gladiators. There, androids are blown up to the delight of the audience. But see, David's just a kid robot and, well, the crowd just ain't having that. So they turn on the ringmaster. David and Joe get free and go off in search of the blue fairy, the one from Pinocchio, a story Monica read to David once when things were better. David, thinking it real, wants to find her so she can make him an actual, living, breathing boy that Monica will then love. There's adventure and disappointment ahead as our robot buddy movie swivels and swerves through the obstacles of the future until David finally finds his one true desire. Or does he? The end.
The film.
Wow, you summed up a very long movie very quickly.
Oh, I had to leave so much out.
Yeah.
It was just, whoa, all over the place. Yeah, speaking of leaving out, I think we're going to leave out most of the cast listed on IMDb because...
There's an awful lot of people.
As soon as we get to the term super nerd, and I would like to give a shout out for somebody I did not see or recognize. Clark Gregg is in this.
Yeah.
But
Agent Coulson is in this as one of the super nerds.
Yeah, pretty much there's just
I also like people. The murderer, the one who frames Gigolo Joe. I'm sitting there going, ah, I see. So one of the Thermians came back to Earth.
Who?
That's we need your help.
Oh, Galaxy Quest?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't register for me, but yeah, I'm going to say the top seven are the only people worth talking about.
Yeah.
But let's face it, this film pretty much hinges on the performance of one actor, and that's Haley Joel Osment.
Oh, I was going to say Sam Robards, but okay.
No, you weren't. Or you're fired.
Not. Yeah, yeah. This, yeah, basically, they're like, hey, Haley Joel, we got this movie. Would you mind carrying it for us?
Kinda, yeah.
On your tiny little shoulders.
And you know how we feel about children actors in general, which is, yeah, could they be in the back, maybe in that closet over there? That'd be great.
Honestly, he's one of the exceptions. Yeah. I've always thought Haley Joel Osment as a kid actor, is amazing.
Yeah, especially in Sixth Sense.
Sixth Sense?
Yeah,
oh,
this
Lord.
Film made me want to go back and rewatch Sixth Sense. And I felt so bad for him that film because I don't think I've ever seen a kid look more beleaguered by guilt or evil or anything than he did in that movie. And he was younger in that than he was in this.
But in this, he just shows such a range.
Yeah.
He has to go from Sunbot loves you very much to... actual child to incredibly creepy to wildly angry to loving. He runs the gamut.
Yeah, I think he did a great job. And it was a thankless kind of job because it's like, so we need to shave you every day. And we also need to spritz you with oil to make your skin look a little shiny. And you decided not to blink. That's on you. But yeah, enjoy. So he does a great job in this.
He's terrific. We got Jude Law.
Jude Law is fine for the 5 minutes he's on screen.
It is Jude Law. He'll march into the Forbidden Jude.
Yeah, we only get to see him for like 10 minutes. And
but he's very memorable.
Oh, he is. And I think the most memorable thing of his performance is his body language. He does this great thing when he activates his self stereo or whatever you want to call it. He sort of cocks his head quickly to one side, which I don't know why he would even need to do that, but it does add to the character.
Yep.
But the way he walks and dances and moves is really interesting.
He'll just suddenly start tap dancing for no apparent reason.
Well, it's what he does. He says so. He's the buddy.
He is. He's just there. Yeah. He's your buddy. He's there for joy, for pleasure.
Yeah.
He's a lot of fun. And Jude Law, I think, nails it.
And I also don't know why he isn't just wildly successful. Oh, I can just dial up and have Jude Law show up on my doorstep for sex? Seriously. And we have Frances O'Connor as Monica. I don't know her. Do you know her from anything?
Not really, no. She's done a bunch of stuff, but... I don't know how much high-profile stuff she's
mom.
Done.
I think she does a great job. Mom. She's very troubled. She's very torn because she has this son that she goes and reads to in his old cryogenics chamber, you know, whether he can hear her or not, we don't know. And it seems early on in the film that he's never coming out. They're like, we don't even know. Yeah. We don't know what he's got. So, and they're like, we can't help him. He
has movie disease.
He has ABC after school special disease.
Yeah.
And she doesn't want to move on. And the husband, Henry, does. And when he brings home David and, you know, the robot, she is initially just like, I don't even like this idea. Never mind the execution. Mm. But you can tell she just needs something. She's got, I don't know, that thing that mothers have where their child was taken away or they, you know, something happened and they just have this affection that needs to go somewhere.
The problem is the kid is still alive. Right. So it's not like she can let him go. She still has this crippling, terrible hope.
Yeah. And I honestly...
No, she does a good job with it.
Especially considering that I don't think creepy is even the word for it.
David is weird. Yeah. David is like a fae, you know? He's like a fae child.
Yeah, that's actually a really good description. He has a line early in the film. She puts him to bed and he says, I can't sleep, but I can lay quietly and not make a peep. What kind of hell is that? I will now lay here for 8 hours and do nothing. Okay, but...
And if you look, I have my eyes open.
I think she does a really good job. Yeah. Sam Robards plays Henry, her husband.
Yep.
Henry, in general, I think he's fine, but he does a 180 awful fast because this is all his idea.
Yeah, and he really wants, because he's a company man. Yeah. And he's like, this is my company. They're putting a lot of trust in me. Get it out! Get it out! Get it out!
Yeah, I mean, he's the one who wants to send it back to the Daisy Hill puppy farm, right? Because
as he wants to have him sent up for upstate to a nice farm where he can run and play with other robots.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, by the way, I'm sorry, Sam. I'm sure you're fine, but talk about getting a job through your parents. You know who his parents are?
No. Oh, God, it's Jason Robards.
Jason Robards and Lauren Bacall.
They were married?
I didn't say that.
Ah, wow. Okay.
But they were. I think they were married for about 5 minutes.
Oh, after old Humphrey died, huh? Well, you know, fine. I don't know him from anything else either, but I think he does fine.
Yeah. Then we have he does a good job.
Jake Thomas as Martin Swinton, the kid, who is
a dick.
Oh my God, is he horrible? But
he's absolutely believable.
I kind of get it. He's like, I've been suffering with this ABC disease, and I come home and you've supplanted me.
You have literally replaced me with a toy.
Yeah, he's a dink. But I think Jake Thomas does a good job at being a kid dink. And I totally believe the things that he puts David through, you know. We have William Hurt as Professor Hobby.
Ah, yes. And of course, we all remember his lobby.
So I wonder what he does for a living, if this is...
Yeah.
He's fine. He's literally on screen for maybe 10 minutes tops. I don't...
He's kind of the Geppetto figure.
Oh, he's more than kind of the Geppetto figure, because it turns out, spoiler, it's in the theme song, folks. His son, David, apparently died, I guess. We don't even know. Yeah. And so this whole project is to make David, except it's not just to make David, it's to make Davids. There's lots of them.
Yeah, we're going to get to that later. Yes, we are.
And honestly, after that, that's pretty much it.
There's some interesting voice acting. You know who the narrator was and the voice of one of the robot who is just sort of a face on a pinball machine?
I saw it and I forgot.
Yeah. Is Ben Kingsley.
Oh, that's right. What a waste of Ben Kingsley.
Yeah. Yeah, it really was. Yeah. And the Blue Fairy, that's Meryl Streep. Yeah.
You know, Meryl Streep started off as what seemed to me to be this very self-absorbed, cold actor that was proper and everything. And then eventually she developed a sense of humor. And I really like Meryl Streep. I think she's funny. I'd like to... She
always was talented. She just changed her image a bit.
But she became an actor that is like, you know, I would like to meet Meryl Streep. I bet she's a hoot. a waste of her. I mean, because it's fine. I didn't recognize her. It could have been anyone. She does fine. That's pretty much it for the cast. But, oh, boy.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but I think there's a lot to talk about in this film.
Oh, yeah.
We start off with them hitting the nail on the head with the climate change, which was only slightly horribly uncomfortable. although I still have to question, we lose Manhattan, but we keep New Jersey. Could you explain that to me, please?
There are some things even the ocean won't touch. Hey, Ayo!
I just, huh?
Sorry, I'm sorry, New Jersey.
I mean,
it's unfair.
Why couldn't it have been Western Pennsylvania, which would have made more
sense? It should have been. I mean, New Jersey is a coastal state.
Isn't it on the shore?
It's on the shore. It's on the shore. The shore would be gone.
Yeah. So yeah, it's important you ask me how I'm going to get down to the shore.
How are you going to get down to the shore?
I'm glad you asked. Sorry, that's a deeper tone. Bitchin' Camaro.
So, oh.
Yeah. I will say, we start off on, what do you want to call this? The group meeting on expository dialogue. I mean, I'm sorry, where they discuss what the film's about.
Yes, the plot explanation.
Yeah. And they
by the way, can you explain why Professor Hobby Lobby has decided that the best place to build this is in Manhattan?
To be fair.
Which is flooded.
To be fair. At this point, we don't know that. We don't find that out till later.
True.
And it's like,
but still.
The property values are cheap.
I guess so.
I don't know. But they do have a very interesting discussion on how AI is not human, right?
Yeah.
And they talk about, now I do have an argument to poke back. They say, can you get a human to love them back? Are you kidding? Have you ever heard of Tamagotchi? Oh, dear God.
Are you kidding? real girl dolls. Ugh. Or, yeah, I'm sorry, but it's true. Or those people love who marry pillow. Body pillows. Yeah. There is someone who will fall in love with literally anything. There was an entire reality show about people falling in love with cars.
Getting humans to fall in love with an inanimate or even an animate object, as long as it's not creepy, David. I don't think that's not the hard part. That's not the hard part. But
it isn't.
Getting an actual machine to understand and feel love, that to me, that I don't understand why they tried to turn that around, but no, I didn't buy that part at all. It's like, again, there are people who are like, people are still using their Tamagotchis. That's still a thing. And that was what, 90s?
Haven't they all died by now?
But it's like, oh no, it pooped. I have to scoop up the poop or it'll be sad. It's literally a calculator. That's all. It doesn't know anything. It's just aiming emotion faces at you and you're buying it. So yeah, I don't think that. I will say though that discussion did make me stop and ponder what love actually is. And
I want to know what love is. I want you to show me.
Yeah, but I only like...
I want to feel what love is.
I only like the version by Big Daddy, so...
Yeah.
And I think that's actually... Whenever a film can stop and make you consider something like that, I think that's cool. And there's a number of times when this film does do that. And I did start to think and wonder about that. It's like, okay, not only do you have to literally define it, and yeah, I could look up a dictionary definition, but that's not it. You're trying to describe this to something that has cognitive capabilities but does not understand emotion because there's no purpose for it, right? Mm-hmm. For them. So I did find that part pretty interesting. Did you at all?
Yeah, that was kind of interesting, although it does feel a little Star Trek. What is love?
Well, if you got half an hour, I can show you.
What is the purpose of love? First, show me kiss. Yes.
And then we'll go from there. And he does. There is one episode of Star Trek, and I never caught this. There's one episode of Star Trek where Kirk and the lady are in his quarters. They cut away, and the next scene is Kirk putting his boots on. And I'm like, wow. Yeah.
Well, I guess he was knocking them.
Yeah.
Okay.
He was buffing them out.
That's it.
Yeah.
Telling secrets. Yeah.
But Henry manages to convince Monica to give David a try. And they bring him home, Henry brings him home and says, here, wait here. And then we cut away, and then she turns back, and there it is, staring at her.
That is so crazy. Everywhere she goes in the house for some period, suddenly, there he is, moving silently, just appearing and staring at her. And yet, she still decides she wants to put him into bonding mode. You know, that's...
Right.
There's this thing where if she reads a bunch of random words like correct horse battery staple. There's a deeper.
That, I don't know that one.
Oh, that's from XKCD. It's a explanation of strong passwords.
Okay.
If they say it, then he will suddenly completely bond to the person who says it. Basically treat them like a parent. I don't get why she does it. Because almost the whole time she's like, ew! Get this away from me. All I can figure is she gets so desperate and so lonely that she can't help herself.
So I want to ask you something real quick before I respond to that. Do you want to talk about the structure of the movie now, or do you want to wait a bit for that?
Let's talk about the structure, actually. Yeah.
So as I said in the trivia, chunks of this movie are not like the others. And I initially, when I first saw this film in 2001... 2001, get it? I thought that the weird city parts were the Kubrick parts and the kid and parent parts were the Spielberg parts. And it turns out that that's not the case. It's the other way around. This time around, even though I do trivia second, I don't do it before I watch the movie. I was like, wow, this film just jumped the rails because we're in this nice house in this nice suburb that somehow doesn't float in New Jersey. And we see the future and we see what people are talking about, blah, blah, blah. Oh, but by the way, flesh fair. What is a flesh fair? Oh, it has nothing to do with flesh. It's a robot destroying circus with a Mad-Eye Moody in it.
Yes, as Brendan Gleeson, as Lord Johnson Johnson.
Having a great time, you can tell.
Oh, he is having so much fun.
Yeah. And it's literally like, oh, we just go around rounding up wandering robots that aren't with anybody because you just have that? You just let them go?
They're that cheap that they can just wander around and no one tries to reclaim them?
Yeah, because they seem, what's the word, useful.
Yeah,
and
they look expensive.
To be fair, up until a certain point, it also appears like they are following Asimov's three rules of robotics, which, honestly, we really should revisit because when we're starting to make those things, and Asimov solved this problem, what, 70 years ago? And
yeah, and we're not listening.
Yeah, and to be fair, the only one that breaks the rules is David, because even when they're being chased, none of the robots fight back. They just run.
But obviously, they don't have the rules because Gigolo Joe is framed for a murder, so obviously it is theoretically possible for a robot to commit murder.
Well, we don't know that. We don't know that, like, that may just, we don't know. They don't bring up the rules, it just by their actions, it seems like they are,
we assume,
sensibly following the three rules of robotics, which is good. And so there's apparently, everything outside the nice city is, how should I put this, a trailer park.
And all a Blade Runner-esque trailer park.
Not even that. It's literally just a county fair. And apparently this guy, Brendan Gleeson, flies around in a balloon that it looks like the moon for reasons that I don't understand. But and he chases down robots with folks that are left over from Running Man. and they don't even do it. They don't even make them fight, or they just blow them up or pull them apart or set them on fire. They just
break them and pour acid on them. Apparently this is all I could figure is this like some kind of demolition derby?
Well, except that there's no competition. It's literally just destroying robots.
Yeah, it just seems wasteful.
And understandably, the audience is like, that's a kid. You can't destroy a kid, but it's a robot. We don't care. We hate you now. And so there's this whole thing where they have to get away and go find the blue fairy, and Gigolo Joe and David have to be together. Oh, I keep forgetting. There's also Teddy. There is Teddy Ruxpin. Remember Teddy Ruxpin?
Yeah, pretty much. It's a sentient toy bear who is basically there as a deus ex ursa.
But here's the thing. I actually think of the robots we see, it's the one that makes the most sense.
He does. It's a toy, and he's not like, he has no superpowers. No. He's clearly not terribly intelligent, although he does one thing that's kind of weird, and that's saving the hair.
Yeah, but we need that as a plot point. So, and we're going to get to that part later, too. So we go, the whole middle of the film is this outside world. I'm going to say white trash because if there's any people of color in there, I didn't see them, or they're in the background, they don't get to talk.
No, this is a very white movie. As, by the way, I was thinking, wow, this really is a Stanley Kubrick movie. Because he doesn't do movies with people of color.
I want to
say his movies are overwhelmingly white.
I want to say one of his earliest films did, and I can't remember what it's called. It's not one that I've seen.
It ain't Clockwork Orange.
It was a black and white
2001.
Film. It was a black and white film. I don't remember. It is. It is very heavily white film. I then don't understand, because there's a whole, I guess there's, now we have to have the Lord of the Rings, and they're going off to find the Blue Fairy or whatever.
They're off to see the wizard.
Yeah, and so they now get picked up by a bunch of teenagers, because teenagers are known for picking up robots, especially one who says, hey, I can get you in with this robot
whore. I can get you laid, basically, which, is what he says.
Thankfully, we don't actually see and why they believe the gigolo, I don't know. They drive into, honestly, one of the more believable parts of the movie, which is Whore Town.
Yes, Rouge City, or as I thought of it, Moulin Rouge City.
Yeah, and it is the, you know, gambling center. It is the where you, you know, pick up your nice robot whores and stuff. And quite honestly, we already know this is a thing. That people are making robots so you can have sex with them, because
that's
what technology does.
Yep.
And so then we go and we have to meet up with Dr. No, which is played by Robin Williams, who's really out of place in this film.
Every time they walk in, I keep waiting for it to say, "The details of my life are quite inconsequential."
And he has,
I know it's spelled differently, but...
And then, so they somehow decide there's a message left for David, magically, to go to this place. And so they're getting arrested, so of course they steal a police helicopter and fly out. And luckily, once you leave Rouge City, the cops can't chase you.
Oh, yeah.
At least not for a long time.
No, and nor can they take remote control of your stolen hella flyy water thingy.
Yeah, because it's a helicopter that goes underwater, because we need that later.
It sounds like something a kid came. A lot of this movie looks like something a kid would come up with.
And then we get back to the Steven Spielberg part of the film and get back to the Kubrick part of the film, which apparently is a lot wetter than the Steven Spielberg part of the film. So he gets up and they're in the thing and he meets up with Professor Hobby again. But oh, lo and behold, there's other David robots. So I found the structure, those two bracketing parts and the middle part kind of don't fit together.
They don't. Yeah, the tone and the pacing, which overall the pacing in this movie I think is very good. It's 2.5 hours long.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel like it.
Well, it's Spielberg. Let's face it. I don't know if I've ever watched a Spielberg film and said, "Wow, that was slow." Even if I didn't like it, he knows how to pace a film and keep us interested.
Yep.
And that was one of the other problems I had with the film, is that this film brings up some really interesting questions, and then it just lets itself get distracted and not deal with them at all.
Yeah. I mean, Joe, oddly enough, is the one who throws all these wild, high-minded concepts around.
Yeah.
They made us too smart, too quick, and too many. It's like, wait, what? Talk more about that. What are you talking about? Is this the Matrix? Which came out, you know, a couple of years before. Are we worried that, okay, the robots are going to take? No, okay, never mind. Fine.
More
scenes of Haley Joel Osment.
Well, I wish there had been, because I think that his interaction and the dichotomy of real Martin versus David and the family and how he is developing, because it takes time. Yeah. I think that should have been more explored, and this weird. White trash, running man, super future. I really expected Richard Dawson to come popping out at some point, right? I wish we had seen more of that, because the whole question is, can we produce an AI, a robot, that understands human emotions? The more important question is, why are we doing this?
Well, they explain, because all the population's been decimated.
Oh.
There aren't that many people left, and resources are low, and they need something that doesn't. They need workers that don't eat, I guess.
Are the resources low? Because
yeah, I gotta say, there's an awful lot of foliage around there for.
Well, look at Rouge City. It's not like every other store isn't some sort of restaurant or something.
No.
So
that part doesn't fit the opening narration.
I'm gonna go right out on a limb and say, you know what? The whole thing with the global warming and stuff, don't need it. Not important. Doesn't add anything to the film. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's right.
The whole
although it does explain the new ice age that hits, you know, 5 minutes later.
Well, we're going to get to that part.
The
thing to me seems to be the focus of the film should have been the comparison of artificial intelligence, fake humans to real humans. How do we know what they're actually feeling and thinking? And should we do that? Like, why are we doing this? And the film brings up some really cool things about this. And it's one of my favorite science fiction subjects. Where is that line? Because at some point, we can kind of feel that David crosses it. And I think, I would like to hear your version of this, but I think it's when he shows up back with Professor Hobby, and Professor Hobby says, "Hey, wait here a minute, I'm going to go get my friends." Oh dear, the actors have already left for the day. We'll pretend to do that. And he walks around and runs into another David. And he just finally just goes.
Which he kills.
And that's where the laws of robotics are broken.
Yeah.
He cannot deal with the idea that there might be another him that might be getting love that he's not getting.
When he actually starts manifesting the negative emotions of a human, I think that's possible. I mean, that's something that his dad, you know, Henry says. Yeah. If they've taught, if he's able to love, doesn't that mean he's able to hate?
Yeah. I mean,
it's like, yeah, it clearly does.
You don't get one.
I think that's part of it. Honestly, I think the way the movie is structured and the way I think they, I think you're right. I think that's where it really, he crosses the line. But I think the idea with the movie, at least as far as Hobby Lobby thinks, is when he decides to embark on the quest at all, when he decides, it's a hero's journey.
Yeah.
When he decides to find the blue fairy.
Yeah.
And that's because, as he says, you took a dream and you didn't want it to make it real. Mm. And that is... That is one of the defining aspects of humanity, is to take it, first off, is to dream, and then to believe they can make that dream a reality.
Well, they even say in the beginning that one of their goals is to make the robot dream.
Yeah.
Which,
yeah, I don't,
then it doesn't sleep. But
that I don't understand. Yeah.
Well, and we don't even know why we dream necessarily, but it's...
No, besides...
I think it's because we have to reboot. Just, that's how we reboot, yeah. Right? Because we're having problems. Well, turn us off, turn us back on, we're fine.
Yep. Yep. No, it's pretty obvious. I mean, besides, if it did make robots dream, they would just dream of electric sheep. We know that.
Never shows up in Blade Runner. Isn't that weird?
No.
They dream of unicorns and their cutie marks.
That is such a... Oh, stop it.
Cheese sandwich. Okay.
Evil.
Yeah.
It's so odd when he's wandering around the dollhouse, basically Geppetto's workshop, and he sees more Davids hanging from the walls. And I have in my notes... Dave in a box. Put Boxo Dave right out of business.
Yeah. Cause that was
For some reason, one of them starts moving for no reason.
Yeah, no reason at all. Doesn't make sense.
No.
I don't know. I also have a question about that whole thing. If David's based on Professor Hobby's son, we assume he's dead because there's a photo of him looking like Haley Joel Osment on the desk, and they never talk about it, but we guess.
Yeah.
Why didn't he test out David first?
They couldn't afford William Hurt for that long.
I don't know, but it's also, is that really the answer you want, is to make a robot of your son and then make him available for everybody?
See, I do understand why he would give it to someone else, because he's trying to do research. He's trying to come at this scientifically, and he's emotionally compromised. What would it do to him to have this robo son that looks exactly like his original son?
Yeah.
The thing I don't get is, like you say, why make them all look the same? Yeah. If you are creating this for childless couples, or couples who can't have children, or want a second child, they're going to want one that look like the guys down the street's kid. You would think a lot of
this year's little league team is David.
Yeah. It's like, okay, which one's mine? I literally don't know. They're all physically identical.
Yeah.
You would want them. I mean, think about it. You could also that's where you'd make your money, is customization and like trying to make the robot look like a mix of the parents. It makes no sense to make them all look the same.
My kid has a kick-ass stereo built into him.
That's it.
Well, and glass packs and bag wheels.
Chad Craigies, yeah. My kid has Bluetooth 9, yeah.
So, I mean, never mind the fact that these things, as far as we know, do not in any way grow. There doesn't seem to be
age.
We don't see anything that suggests that the kid ever changes. That's going to be great for like a year.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money to spend and a lot of resources to make something that's going to be the same in a year.
See, I realize that looking at this through a hyper-realistic lens, it falls apart.
Yeah.
This is much more of a parable, a fairy tale, whatever, because from a business point of view, it's genius. It's like, oh, you want the kid to be older? Let us transplant that, you know, chip brain into this older body for a small upgrade fee. It's like basically Microsoft the body.
That's why I wish there was less of the flesh fare and more of dealing with the repercussions of making this thing and what is going to be, because you wanted to understand love and emotions and stuff, and that's fine. But once that happens, we want to see what happens next, and we never really get that, except that he sees himself and destroys it. Like, and then he just wants to be real and finds out that he can't be real. And I want to get to the end of the movie.
They could have spent some of that time covering the idea of free will. do these creatures, if they can love and they can dream, do they have free will? Does that make them slaves?
I mean, that's a huge question in a lot of these things.
Yeah.
So, speaking of free will and stuff, so at the end of the film, basically he finds out that the Blue Fairy is not real and that there's lots of Davids and that so on and so forth. And he goes to the edge of the building and he's sitting on it looking out over the vast ocean that should be covering New Jersey.
Fifth Avenue. Yeah.
And then he does something. Now, do you think, well, he doesn't jump, he just falls off the building.
Yeah.
Do you think he was trying to escape or commit quote-unquote suicide?
I think he just wanted to get away. He had just had enough. He was overwhelmed. And I think there was a certain level of, I can't take this anymore.
Yeah.
That's another part of him, in a way, becoming human. He experiences despair.
Yeah.
And then for some reason, the fish pick him up. Why do the fish pick him up? How do the fish pick him up?
They were looking for Nemo and...
that's it. Yes,
he spoke whale. Couple of Pixar,
all I could think of was a couple of Pixar things. Because then, when that big grapple comes down, all I could think of was the claw.
We do get to a part that I really like, though, and that is 2,000 years in the future. Let's not even talk about 2,000 years, and the buildings are still up, and the robot is still okay, even though
he's... How did the Blue Fairy statue survive 2,000 years first under the ocean and in solid ice?
I really like the mecha at the end of the film. The evolved...
Oh, the hyper-evolved machines?
Yeah, I really like the way they're designed. I like the way they look. I love the visual metaphor of them passing information to each other. Because they've obviously tapped into David's memory, which is strongly visual, which makes sense. Yeah. And there's a little bit of video playback on, I think it's their chest, or maybe their face. And then
in their faces.
The next one will touch the first one. And they just very democratically pass all the information around. I like them. I think they're really, initially I thought they were aliens. And then I realized, no, they're just.
That's what I thought. I mean, were they aliens, alien machine intelligences? No. Or was this just what 2,000 years of robotic evolution would bring?
That's what it was. Because they actually revere the humans. They're like, we have books, but we don't know anybody who's ever met one. And you've met one. Like, you lived with them.
Yeah.
And then we get this weird end thing. And David's wish, quite honestly, is just too complicated. Okay, I want you to bring back Monica. Well, it turns out we can do that with a certain set of circumstances, but oh no, even though we can pull all their memories out of a hair and bring them back, somehow when they go to sleep, they die. It's very sad.
I wish they had gone a little bit more into... He tries to explain it. He says it's that DNA or whatever, life itself is actually part of the space-time continuum, and if a life is over, it can't fit back into it, but...
We don't need it.
It sounds too much like Star Trek technobabble, and also, I am sorry, I know this is nitpicking. There is no DNA in hair. It's in the follicle.
They did that in Star Trek Next Generation once, and they're very careful to go, look, follicles, live cells, because they knew that.
Yeah, yeah, because here... It's a piece he cut off from the end of her hair, a lock of her hair. There's no follicle. There physically can't be. There's no DNA. No.
Well, Max, as you know, during certain times of the year, follicles are migratory.
They are. Are you suggesting follicles migrate?
So
it's like a swallow brought it to the end of the hair.
And Teddy, of course, took the hair and that's not from kept a whole it. Thing. I'm not even going to go into that. Yeah, honestly, what should have happened is, I think, David, they say, David, what do you wish? And we'll do our best. And David says, I want Monica to come back. We can't do that. But what can we do? If David had said, if I could just have one perfect day with Monica, you know, that would be enough. And they give him that. And if they're really kind after that, they basically turn him off.
Yeah, well, that's the suggestion. I mean, that whole, he went to the place where dreams are born.
Sure.
Is that death? I don't know. I assume.
Somehow you can reboot him after 2,000 years.
And then they leave Teddy all alone.
I know, that was my last note. It's like, Teddy! And he's just in there going,
crap.
You all don't need toys, do you?
I'm hoping maybe they can upgrade him or make him a super bear or something.
And I'm amazed that they actually did a Teddy thing, because that's not that far from when Teddy Ruxpin come out. And I got to tell you, my niece had one. Teddy Ruxpin was creepy.
He's worse. He's like a Teddy Ruxpin and a Furby combined.
And I get it. And I understand why he's there. But that was just mean.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So you are no account. Go away. So, yeah, they made this, the whole DNA thing unnecessary, not needed. No. There's a bunch of junk in this film like that. That's like, stick to their central core idea, because you're doing some really interesting things. Visually, the film is very cool in a lot of places.
Oh, yeah.
Rouge City is really neat looking. And
it is. The robots are really interesting designs. Yeah. They're very well done. Yeah. Given this was, 25 years ago.
Yeah.
The effects are remarkable, especially, David talking to himself.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
I think that there's a lot of stuff, really stuff we should be thinking about. In fact, what we should be thinking about is whether we actually think, with all of the stuff that goes against it, do we think the movie works or not? Because it is 55 minutes in, so let's get to that part.
The finish.
So, Max.
Yo.
Did you see AI when it came out?
I did. I saw it in the theater.
Do you remember what you thought at the time?
Yeah, I had very mixed feelings about it.
In what respect do you remember?
I remember loving the performances, but I remember thinking it was very depressing, and all I could think was, okay, I can see Spielberg going, okay, I'm going to make this grim. I'm going to make it gritty. I'm going to make it sad. I'm not going to do a happy ending. I'm not going to do a happy ending. I'm not going to... I have to do a happy ending!
Supposedly, the guy who wrote the
screenwriter, allegedly,
he says that's exactly what he got from Kubrick's notes. I've seen a number of Kubrick films. None of them.
None of them end that nicely. I'm sorry, Steve. Maybe that's how you interpreted it, but you're wrong. Kubrick would never have done. He doesn't do nice endings.
No.
They can be satisfying. They can be justified. He doesn't do fairy tales.
No. Which may be why he gave it to Steven Spielberg. He never actually attempted to make this film. It was something that he worked on for 20 years and finally said, you know what?
I can't make a happy ending. I don't know how.
Teddy bears, huh?
Here's Steve, not doing you it. Do it.
What
about you?
Well, have you seen it since then?
No, I have not. This is the first time I've seen it in over 20 years.
Now, with a different perspective, you're a little older, a little bit more experienced at reviewing movies. Maybe like Roger Ebert, you're going to give it that extra star. What do you think, Max?
I think it's a mixed bag. I still do. I think it's interesting. I think the visuals are really good. I think the performances are really good, most of them. Robin Williams had no business being in there.
No.
But overall, I think it's too disparate. I think you're right. The parts don't fit together well.
Yeah.
Honestly, I also think the movie should have ended with him sitting in the helicopter underwater staring at the statue of the Blue Fairy.
Probably.
I thought that's where it should have stopped.
Yeah.
In fact, I think that's honestly what Kubrick would have done.
Yeah. Yeah, it said that the ending was what Kubrick wanted. It didn't say that Steven didn't tack something on after that.
Yeah,
Would you recommend it at all?
Yes, because as a piece of filmmaking, it's fascinating. It's really interesting to watch. And like I say, the cast is fun to watch. I love Jude Law in this. I think he's so much fun. And Haley Joel Osment is just almost supernaturally good for it, but not just as a kid actor, but as an actor. Mm. Kind of sorry he didn't become more of a, of a mainstream star. He's still working, but he has a lot of little things.
Yeah, he's had some issues and might be anti-Semitic too.
But again, I would recommend it, but I can't really say I like it.
Mm.
It's interesting. What about you? Did you see it when it came out?
Sure did.
Yeah? What'd you think of it then?
I wasn't sure. In a way, it reminded me of Eyes Wide Shut, a film that I've seen six times and still don't know if I like or not. And I was like, well, there's some interesting stuff here. There's some visually cool stuff. I think I initially thought, oh, yeah, here's this middle part that Kubrick's doing. And then there's these, happy family crap stuff that Spielberg's doing. Turns out exactly the opposite. I think Kubrick was trying to ask the big questions and Steven Spielberg would rather have been distracted, which is a shame. And at the time, I wasn't sure. I remember thinking it really interesting. And I have watched it a few times since then. But usually, to be fair, in the background while I'm doing other things, and I run through the whole film, but I'm not paying that close attention. So this time, though, Yeah, it's really choppy. The whole stuff with the flesh fair is awkward. It doesn't really have a point, except I swear, and I haven't timed it, but like there's a lot of Hollywood scripts are timed to have their points of anguish or flux literally a certain period of time into the script. And I can't help but wonder if that's what that was there for.
Maybe.
Conflict. It's just like, yeah. And it just was like, why? This is a whole section of society you're throwing into the mix and diluting some really interesting stuff that you brought up. And I would rather have stayed dealing with that. I would rather have seen society that was connected to this family that seems to have lived on an island somewhere and didn't talk to anybody, you know, because we don't, do they have friends, neighbors? We don't know.
They go out. Well, we see them go out once.
They have a really cool car. I loved the future car. The future car was neat. The
future car was very nice, yeah.
But it's like, that's what's important. Not all this other flashy stuff. It's the societal, are they accepting the robots? Are they not? Do they want this? Why do we want this? Can it succeed? Should it succeed? How do we know when it succeeds? Hopefully better than when the one robot kills the other one by smacking its head off. That's more interesting, and I really wish that the film had stayed with that.
And some of it, I have to say, is really hitting you over the head.
Oh, literally.
I mean,
you or David.
That poem they keep using, Come Human Child. You know what that is? It's a William Butler Yeats poem called The Stolen Child.
Oh.
And it's about fairies taking away a child because the world is too filled with weeping. The world is too cruel. We're going to take you to live with us in fairyland.
Well, apparently the film is too weeping, so.
Yeah.
I don't know if I recommend it because it's so uneven. There's so many interesting questions it's trying to bring up and make us think about. I almost want to recommend it just for that. But honestly, the speech we get from Rutger Hauer at the end of Blade Runner does so much more towards that question than this entire film that I think I'm going to have to say no, give it a pass.
Okay.
Because
that's fair.
Yeah. But you know what you shouldn't give a pass? That's our poll question.
Very nice.
So rare that I get one of those. We'd like to know, what movie predicted future events, technology, or people the best? Any event, robot, flying nun, flavor packet, whatever. You don't have to
But Mike, how can they tell us?
Just about to say, you don't have to predict anything. You can go to our website, maxmikemovies.com. There you can see that we have all the episodes laid out. You can search for a movie to see if we have actually covered it or not. You can leave comments. You can talk to Vince. You can talk to Cheeseboy. Whoever else leaves comments there, let us know the answer to this or give us information, feedback about the show. You could also email us at us@maxmikemovies.com. That's our email address. Same thing. If you want to find us on social media, we are on Facebook, Blue Sky, and Mastodon, Max Mike Movies. And of course, looking for a podcast app, we're on there too, Max Mike Movies. But we are just getting started. We've only had two movies in this series so far. Max, what's going to be movie number three?
Well, you know how we keep having Jude Law keep saying, I'm in bad trouble?
Is he?
That made me think of Big Trouble.
What kind of Big Trouble?
Well, the kind you find in Little China.
What? Wait, we really haven't covered Big Trouble in Little China?
We have never done Big Trouble in Little China, and I want to, because if nothing else, it's fun, and I need fun after this movie. Yeah, no, I'm looking at the notes. We've done Big Chill, Big Lebowski, Big Sleep, but not Big Trouble in Little China.
Well, next week we will. Next week,
yes, we will.
Big Trouble in Little China.
This has been a co-production of The Voice of Max and The Movie Wrench.